Monday, May 17th, Hockey Central on the air. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne, bottom of the hour. Keith Jones. We'll talk plenty about that Islander-Penguins series with Jones. He covered off that one over the weekend. But I would suspect, Mr. Justin Bourne, I saw you last night on Sportsnet Central with Eric Thomas doing a hit on this, amongst other topics. We'll spend a large amount of today talking about Tampa and Florida. It's almost as if the best game of the weekend was parked at the very end of it. You know how most games settle in and you just get a rhythm and a flow? That wasn't this game. It was nonstop from opening puck drop right till the final horn. That was
best game of the year.
Best game of the year.
Couldn't agree more, Jeff. I'm sorry to step on you. I was just saying it's a great irony that the last game of the weekend was a 6-5 overtime thriller between Calgary and Vancouver.
And they got it a couple of more times this week still.
I know. But no, it was that was something else. For me, two great teams, two physical teams, two teams with legitimate cup hopes, all that yada yada. For me, it was the fans. And didn't you agree? I mean, just insane the difference they made.
So there were a few moments where you really noticed it. So there was the Nolachari save on Eric Chernak, where you noticed whoa, there's a lot of people in here. You noticed it on that Huberdeau pass to Owen Tippett. Now, it was kind of deflected to Tippett, but you're looking at it in real time. You're like, whoa, what a sweet play by Huberdeau. And Huberdeau was great yesterday. And the place comes unglued. But you know where you really felt it, Borny? Remember at the end of the third period where Sergei Bobrovsky makes two great saves on Anthony Cirelli back-to-back, bang-bang, and the place came on? That's where you really noticed it. Yeah. That's where you noticed, like, oh, man, it's great to have fans. And this isn't like 15,000 people or 17,000 people either. But they were just loud and excited to be part of an outstanding game. And I'll tell you, the first thing that it made me think of was how much of a drag it's going to be that Toronto, Montreal, and Winnipeg, Edmonton won't have fans. That's the first place I went.
It's unavoidable, Jeff, to not think that.
I know. Bigger problems. No one wants to hear us whine about how come there's no fans at hockey games. But here we are. Before we drill down on specifics of some of the games and preview what's ahead tonight, what did you make of the first weekend? I mean, it's always, you know, the opening round, we're always, you know, it's rock and roll, it's full steam ahead. It's, you know, everyone is an energy ball, and we saw it play out over the weekend. We'll see what happens tonight. It's a couple more series get started. What did you make of the weekend? Just wide brush thought.
Well, just that you forget with playoff hockey that not lesser talented teams, but I guess teams that are more, lesser teams are able to get up for single games and bring that energy and really drag better teams into close hockey games. You know, we saw all four games that we've seen so far have been separated by one goal. You know, and that's just a product of the way hockey is. When you get teams that may feel they're a little less talented, they play a little bit more pace and smothering and commitment to defense, and all of a sudden great teams find themselves in hockey games, anything can happen. And, you know, the Islanders beat the Penguins, the Wild beat the Golden Knights. You know, things were different. It's just a reminder of what playoff hockey really is, and it's different.
Let me ask you a question. How many minutes in your life have you thought about Ryan Lomberg?
One, maybe, and it was all last night.
But don't you get the feeling that by the end of this Tampa-Florida series, we're going to have a lot of thoughts and a lot of comments on someone like Ryan Lomberg, who, by the way, tried to get Mikhail Sergachev, I figure, to fight on my last count was 5 or 6 different times.
Yeah.
Every time he's on the ice.
My thought, and no disrespect to Ryan Lomberg, who may, I don't know, adopt puppies and donate to orphans. I was watching the game. I was like, man, he looks like a guy I would hate. Like, he just looks like a guy who'd 100% get under your skin. He's in everyone's face. He's, you know, all that stuff that's like, do we have to do this every whistle? Like, can we just do the hockey thing? He looked like the type of guy who would drive me personally crazy.
But it was everybody in that game last night. I can't wait for game two. And I'm really hoping that Cooper and Quenneville deliver 6 more games just like last night. I don't care who wins. I said Tampa, but really, I don't care. And even the better. I'll tell you what, the best story for Capital H Hockey here in this, you know, first playoff meeting between the defending Stanley Cup champion and the Florida Panthers is for Florida to win. if you want to throw a log on the fire here and keep this thing burning, it's for Florida to take care of the defending Stanley Cup champions in the first round. But there is just so much, Borna, you've talked about this plenty, there is just so much talent on that Tampa team. Not saying they're not talented on the Florida side, and they're playing without Aaron Ekblad, even though Mackenzie Weegar is playing out of his mind right now.
That is a bummer.
And having Ekblad in there just would have been, you know, made it that much better for the Florida Panthers.
One thing that with that game, sorry Jeff, just the the physicality between those two teams was one thing, but it's almost like the fan bases or the fans there brought the emotional level up in the game, and you saw people like more, I guess, unable to find where the line is between okay and not okay. And the Sam Bennett hit on Blake Coleman, I mean, he's coming 1,000 miles an hour at a guy who's not facing him. But then, you know, Ryan McDonough ran Anthony Duclair from behind, and Andre Palat hit Noel Achari from behind in a dangerous situation. Like, the game felt like it had found the line and exceeded it, and the players were having trouble reining it in where they're able to in the regular season.
Steven Stamkos on Marcus Nuttavaara. That was another one in that game last night.
Sergachev on Bennett. There was a bunch.
There was a bunch, and I'm fine. I mean, I know Bennett's got a hearing with the Department of Player Safety for that hit that you mentioned on Blake Coleman. See, I've always had a problem going back to 2005 with the idea of what charging is in the NHL. When everybody's expected to move their feet every moment that they're on the ice, and there's no coasting, and there's no interference, and there's no holding anybody up, could you not make the argument that every hit's a charge?
Yeah. Well, and the worst part is the Bennett clip, if you watch just like a 2-second GIF or whatever from where he comes from, he doesn't take a stride. He's going 10,000 miles an hour, but he doesn't take a stride. So it's like, I understand in hockey we don't want those hits where a guy can be moving as nearly as fast as he can skate and hits a guy.
Yeah. You know what it's like, though? It's like double IHF standard. And we see this, you know, every year when we watch the World Championships. You see it at international tournaments all the time where you're penalized for the violence of the hits. Yeah. As opposed to if there's any actual transgression. Were the elbows up? Well, no, the elbows were down. Did he take more than 3 strides? No, he coasted. But he was going really fast in his coast. And he really caught the guy in a tough spot. It's like, it feels like we're getting that. We're going to that space anyway, where you're going to be penalized more for the effect than whether you really did anything wrong.
Yeah. One thing I can tell you.
You kind of saw that on the Sam Bennett play last night.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Like, I don't think you could say he had immediately taken a couple strides or anything. But I will say, one of the things you can be sure is Florida's not happy with him being suspended. Not so much because they don't think it was a bad hit, but just because there were so many other ones that they kind of feel like that one has been cherry-picked out of the bunch. And I think there's some frustration over being disadvantaged with, you know, they lose Ekblad. All of a sudden, Tampa gets Kucherov and Stamkos back. Like, I feel like they can't let these frustrations overwhelm them and take them away from what they do best, which is playing hockey. And they're at risk right now of focusing on the wrong things, and they need to keep it on the ice right now.
You know what's going to be interesting? Tonight, we're going to see Nashville and Carolina. And if you look at the last two Nashville-Carolina games, I mean, Carolina rung them up 6 times in a row. Nashville won the last two, and they tried to also run them out of the building. Like, Nashville went at Carolina, who's a primarily a skilled team. Nashville went at them hard. You wonder if you're going to see the exact same thing tonight with a lesser skilled Nashville team up against Carolina. But to pick up more on that Florida-Tampa game, which was awesome, we can't underscore that enough. Like, the best game of the weekend was Tampa-Florida, and we have our fingers crossed that we get more of these.
Kucherov is so nasty.
Well, that's what I want to get to. One, he's back. Two, he's excellent again. But three, who's this number 86? Where have they been hiding him? He's pretty good. What did you make about the uproar about quote-unquote cap circumvention, hiding him for a year? The Oilers used to do this with Rayo Ritsalainen. Minnesota did this, I believe, with Ron Wilson one playoff year. He played in Italy and then came back. But Rayo Ritsalainen is the obvious one because Glenn Staley would do that every season with the Oilers. What do you make about the Kucherov move and the cap circumvention drama around it?
I don't want to hear it. That's how I feel about it. You know why I don't want to hear it? Because every team is doing their best to exploit those rules, and I'm not going to get mad at Tampa for doing the best job of it. No. You know, they, you know, Toronto literally employs people, you know, Pridham in particular, for trying to figure out ways to make this happen. They trade for bad contracts and dead money and LTIR money. Everyone is looking to do this. Yeah. You know, Kucherov missing a whole season is not a small risk. Like, this guy needed surgery, and yes, it was done, you know, it, to enable them to do what they did and maximize their chances of winning a cup. But what else are you supposed to do?
So what?
Guy needs surgery. Guy, you know, wants to win another Stanley Cup, and so does Tampa. They're taking a risk that he's going to be rusty or whatever. They rolled the dice, and hey, they're looking pretty good for it. So I can't be too mad at it when everyone is trying to do it, and they did it best.
Okay, let me give you a hypothetical then. What will the nature of the conversation or the nature of the outrage be if Tampa wins the Stanley Cup this year and Anthony Cirelli takes next season off for surgery? Pick a body part.
Yeah. Well, I think you'd have a hard time convincing hockey players not to play hockey. Like, this is a rare opportunity they were to give a guy the time off. I know I wouldn't just say, yeah, okay, for the salary cap, I'm not going to play for a season.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's something they're really at risk of having happen a lot. That said, I think it's something the NHL needs to be careful of. They need to make sure that
this is... I don't
think
they care. You don't think so? I don't think they care. It doesn't seem like they care. Like, they cared about the Ilya Kovalchuk contract, the original one with New Jersey, about cap circumvention, and it wasn't technically because it didn't violate the CBA other than... I mean, you'll recall this very well. The spirit of the CBA.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Well, this definitely violates the spirit of it. But, I mean, everyone's violating the spirit of it. There's nothing left of the spirit. The spirit's in disarray.
You know what you can do about it? Like, if the NHL was that concerned about it, you know what you can do about it? Soft cap luxury tax.
Yeah.
That's what you can do. And does the NHL have any appetite for that? Hang on. Before you answer, the answer is no.
Yeah, okay, they don't. You know, but it's funny how quickly we're thinking of Tampa as some, like, outlaw hockey team here. Like, hey, remember when Patrick Kane, who got hurt in January and managed to be perfectly hurt until the playoffs in 2015?
And they're able to load up, and here comes Antoine Vermette and how they fit in him under the salary cap.
And someone else, too. Vermette and someone else. They added, like, two really good players.
Defenseman from Philadelphia. Who was it?
This has been done. So, mm-hmm. You know, we really need to put that. It sucks for Florida. I'm sorry that it happened to you. You should have won the division, I guess. You know, like, it's a tough bounce to draw a healthy Tampa team. But if we could get back to the ice on this, God, that power play, when they run it around the top to Stamkos and he's cocked ready to shoot it, and everyone's, like, diving over to get in the way like it's Ovechkin. They go back around to Kucherov on the other side. Like, good luck, penalty killers. Like, they got two shooters just loaded.
That's that pass to point. Into the slot when everybody... I mean, did you bite? Because I did. That Kucherov is shooting that thing. Like, everybody bites, and then it's a tap-in for point. Like, it looks like he's just putting it... I know. It's like he's putting it into an empty net on the power play. Because Kucherov has the entire rink and everyone watching television convinced he's firing that thing.
And I don't know where point came from. Like, he came from underneath and up the missile. Like, none of the PKers had him remote. We're within a stick length of him, really. But that's the thing. When you're so loaded up like that, you can shoot at every position. You know, Victor Hedman at the top is one of the best shooters among defensemen in the NHL, too. So that's the thing, you know, and, you know, everything comes back to the Maple Leafs, but you think of, like, you know, two of the three guys at the top of their situation aren't really shooters in what it's been Marner and Riley. It's a different animal when you think the shot is coming from one place. Even the Capitals, when they had Ovechkin, Carlson and Mike Green have played opposite him and been able to bomb it. The Leafs don't really have that other shooting threat.
Matt Marchese, our producer, reminds us, Kimmo Timonen.
There it is.
Boo. Thank you, Maddie. Let's park some time here quickly to talk about the Florida Panthers and how underappreciated Jonathan Huberdeau, I would argue, has been in the last 5 years, where he has been one of the best left wingers in the game. And how many times do we talk about how playoffs build stars and, you know, stars emerge and you really start to notice them come playoff time? Man, Huberdeau was awesome again last night.
Yeah, and I hate to say this, but it's not like you really start to notice them. It's like you really start to watch them because they're in meaningful games. And I think that's part of the reason it's so important for these players who don't get in meaningful games in their careers, why they want to play for good teams, get traded to good teams, and you know have support around them, because all of a sudden he's in a game that really matters. And it's like, oh, Huberto, he's been doing this stuff. You know, he had an amazing game, but he's been doing it. So, yeah, a great start. If Florida's going to have a chance, the old saying is, you know, best player's got to be your best player. Their best players, and he was that for them last night. Just a matter of, man, how do you stop Tampa Bay from being awesome too?
So Elliot and I had this discussion last night when we were recording the podcast. If you're Joel Quenneville, what do you do with Bobrovsky? Does he come back for game two?
Did you fault him for any of those?
It's five at the end of it, right?
It is five. It's five, but like, you know, we're not goal, I'm blaming him.
We're not talking Tristan Jarry territory here, no. But still, it's five.
Like
my point was that it's Bobrovsky versus Tampa, and the best thing we saw 2 years ago was John Tortorella saying Bob stays in, and he fought his way through it. The scenario is different, but it's still that goalie and that team, and so I give him another game, but I could be convinced.
Yeah, no, I tend to lean the way you're leaning. Like, I know Drieger's had a wonderful season, but you know, I don't know, maybe I'm a little biased because I saw him in the American League for a number of years and saw him not be particularly effective. Like, I have a hard time convincing myself that he's suddenly a better goaltender than Bobrovsky. But I know Bob's had a rough run here, so yeah.
And you don't want to hand it to Spencer Knight? You don't want to hand it to Spencer Knight, the kid who's played for about 5 minutes in the NHL?
No, I don't. I value experience in the playoffs, so you're right. Bobrovsky's been through this before. You got to give him another night.
Let me get your thought on one player before you turn the page. It's been an interesting year. Sorry, I shouldn't say it. It's been an interesting season for Keith Yandle. We can all remember game one, he's going to be scratched. The Iron Man streak is coming to an end, and there was an uproar. And I still remember the introductions of that first Florida game, and he's introduced, and the players are going nuts. Yandle scores in that game, and the players go berserk. Like, they love the guy, and it seemed as if they had a player to rally around, and that began this season for the Florida Panthers. And what a season it's been for the Florida Panthers. He was really good again last night. Like, Mac Uyghur is the best defenseman on that blue line right now. With Aaron Ekblad out. Even you can make the argument Mackenzie Weegar's been the best defenseman, period, this year for the Florida Panthers. But man, Yandle was really good last night.
Yeah, he's really good. And I'm with you on Uyghur. What really strikes me when I watch the Panthers play is, you know, when Zito took over in Columbus, I remember him saying, he left Columbus to go there. I remember him in an interview with us. He was talking about his impressions of Florida when he was with Columbus, and he just thought they were easy to play. And not that they beat them all the time or anything, but like the guys made it through the games unscathed. Florida, you know, when the games got gritty, tend to shut, you know, they had a bit of a Maple Leafs-y reputation. So Zito takes over, and he brings over Marcus Nutivaara. They bring in Radko Gudas. You know, they just seem to find this little extra Sam Bennett chippiness to their game.
And Hornquist is a one-person argument to abolish the instigator penalty.
Yeah, exactly. And then we're talking about Lomberg. Like, they all of a sudden, this team is like not that fun to play. But the talented elements remained in place. And oh, look at that! They finished second in the division and almost win the division when they add that element. So I think they're a different looking team, you know, compared to how they were a year ago. So it's not just a flash in the pan team to me.
Tampa draws first blood. They win 5-4. Brayden Point with a pair of goals. Nikita Kucherov was Nikita Kucherov in this one. Great game. Minnesota-Vegas. Joel Eriksson-Ek, who is going to be a stealth candidate for the Selke Trophy this year, just you watch, with the overtime heroics. It does go off Alec Martinez, but it also does get past Marc-Andre Fleury, who was excellent, as was Cam Talbot for the Minnesota Wild. We've talked on this program a number of different times how the best games this season of any teams in any division have been Minnesota and Vegas. And even though it was only a one-goal game, that game delivered, Borny. There was like Ryan Hartman had like a dozen scoring chances just himself, and that line was buzzing. What did you make of Minnesota-Vegas last night? Man, Vegas got a score eventually, right?
Some point. That's the thing. It's like, okay, you're not keeping Vegas off the scoreboard forever. So if that series is, Yeah, series is going to be good. It looked to me like Marc-Andre Fleury paid like $10 at a carnival to make huge fun saves. Like, all right, you guys just shoot these at my glove, and I just get to enjoy. Like, it looked like road hockey fun to me. Marc-Andre Fleury out there just catching everything that was fired top corner. But it was thrilling hockey for a 0-0 game. Definitely a good argument for a lot of fans who like defense or at least low scoring hockey. So yeah, it was a great game. But I still feel I felt watching that game like Vegas is all right here. You know, watching the Pittsburgh Islanders game, I felt like that series could be Pittsburgh could be more in trouble as the favorite in that series than I feel like Vegas is.
No Malkin is concerning, very much so, for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
No saves is concerning.
Tristan Jarry, like, it's not just the J.G. Peugeot goal. It's like three of those goals, and they're all in the same spot, too. I know everyone's like, oh, watch the glove. But in this case, like, all the goals are going glove.
Yeah.
On Tristan Jarry. We're going to get that with Keith Jones. I want to get your thoughts on someone who actually didn't play in the Minnesota game last night yesterday afternoon against the Vegas Golden Knights. Four more years on the contract. $7.5 million is the AAV. The actual money is $10 million, which makes it more palatable for some teams. And this is all contingent on him waiving his no trade. Boy, what's happening here with Zach Parise? Healthy scratch. He's, I would argue, the most popular Minnesota Wild hockey player ever. When you factor in his background and his dad and the state and Shattuck and the Wild and the free agency and this is more than just a hockey situation. Like, this is an emotional situation, a fan situation. This is a tough one for Bill Guerin. And I would argue it's a tough one for Dean Evason to say, this is our best team. This is going to give us the best chance to beat the Vegas Golden Knights. And there's no room for Parise on it. What do you think?
You know, I think it's unfortunate that they couldn't find a way to get him to the Islanders when they had someone trying to take him.
Money was hard.
Yeah, you know, but whatever you had to tie to him to make it happen. But, like, this was
They tried tying Mikko Koivu to him.
Yeah, is that a weight or is that a... I'm not sure if that's good or bad.
Looking for another center. He's a good one. He was until he retired.
Right. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it feels like this was always going to happen. Like, when you give a guy a 13-year contract, it felt like, well, maybe at the end we're going to be left holding the bag and trying to figure out what to do with this. And they didn't have the success they hoped over the sweet spot of the contract, and now everyone's left going, now what? I really don't want to see this play out like Louis Erickson, who's like, you know, gets a ton of abuse for a guy who just signed a contract that was offered to him.
Yeah. $6 million a season. And it's an absolute albatross. We'll see. I mean, it feels like, and again, injuries are a byproduct of playoff hockey, so I don't want to say Zach Parise will never suit up again for the Minnesota Wild. But man, it sure does feel that way, doesn't it, Borny?
Well, I just, like, what happens then? Like, does he retire? Does someone trade and they retain half? Like, who's taking Parise at 3.75?
He's got to agree to waive. Like, he's holding it, right? Like, he's got the no trade. Yeah. Like, he's got to agree to waive in the first.
He's going to want to play, so he surely will.
Unless he just gets bought out.
Yeah.
And he goes and tries to make himself whole on the market somewhere else, not unlike someone like Kyle Turris.
Yeah, that might have to be the option. You know, you could take him on for whatever, $1 million or something like that. But boy, there's just a lot of money attached to him, unfortunately.
It's tough. Okay, we're going to get to the Islanders here in a couple of moments. But the Washington Capitals and the Boston Bruins, and the story coming out of this one is, of course, Craig Anderson. Looks like Anderson's going to go back in tonight, by the way, as the Capitals are facing off against the Boston Bruins Game 2. What did you make of Game 1? By the way, Kuznetsov working as an extra on the practice. I know, right? So you got Backstrom, Eller, Oshie, and Dowd down the middle. No Kuznetsov working as an extra. Came off the protocol list yesterday. It sounds so much like Washington is done with Kuznetsov.
Can you be done enough with him to not play him? Is that possible? No.
I don't know. Like, what could he have done?
That's a scary thought. Surely he gets in. I mean, my God. Anyway, I guess we have have to wait and see how that one plays out. My thought was that I would just delight here in making a lot of people very angry and just say, how good was Tom Wilson? Was Tom Wilson just...
He was great.
Unbelievable. Like, you know, I just... what he does is... unlike many other players in the NHL, between scoring, but like the physical element of his game was there. You know, I know people hate him, but like there's just no doubt he's just such an effective player.
He's good. Like at the end of it, he's a really good hockey player. And that line was strong, and Oshie was real good. And the Eller line with Raffle and Connor Sheary, you know, hard matched, it seems, for most of the game against the perfection line of the Boston Bruins. Did an amazing job.
Yeah.
Like to me, Eller's always been one of the secret weapons in the game. When he was with Montreal, before that St. Louis, now with Washington, I got all day long for Lars Eller and players like him. And you see it in the playoffs. Man, was Eller good. But you're right about Tom. And who scores the first goal of the playoffs this year?
Wilson, of course.
Tom Wilson.
I mean, how... it's just like the... from like a decade ago, like the You Mad internet meme. Maybe that was two decades ago now. I don't know. But like, man, it's just... you understand why teams put up with the rest of what comes with Tom Wilson. And I got to believe that people thought he should be suspended for the year for the play on Panarin there did not enjoy that hockey game.
Not at all. We step away. Keith Jones joins us here in a couple of moments. We'll get on the Islanders Penguins page. No Malkin in game one. Big comeback by the New York Islanders. Some goaltending drama there. Lots to get to with Jonesy. Stay tuned. More Hockey Central in moments. Playoff edition. Man, was that weekend good. Let's get more of this kind of hockey in the game. We'll see what happens tonight. We got Vegas, or we got Carolina facing off against Nashville. Also got Colorado facing off against the St. Louis Blues. So fingers crossed that this, I want to say momentum that's been built over the weekend with all these games carries into Monday because it's been fantastic. More Hockey Central in moments. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll be right back. Okay, tonight on CBC and Sportsnet, 7:30, note the start time. Boston Bruins, Washington Capitals, 8 o'clock on Sportsnet East, the Preds and the Hurricanes at 10 o'clock on Sportsnet 1. It is the St. Louis Blues and the Colorado Avalanche. Welcome back to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. Pleased to be joined now by our good friend Keith Jones from the NBC Sports Group, NHL analyst, who joins us here on a semi-frequent basis. Jonesy, how are you today? Thanks for stopping by.
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, man. Like before we sort of drill down on, you know, Islanders and Penguins, just from what you've seen and going right into last night with that chaotic, amazing Florida-Tampa game, it's just one weekend in. It's just a couple of days. Day three is today. We got a couple of new matchups. What do you think so far, Jonesy?
I have absolutely loved every second of it. And it is not disappointed, and it is not surprised either. I think expectations were that this would be an incredibly hard-fought playoff year, and whoever wins the Stanley Cup is going to have to go through, obviously, like every other season, extremely difficult battles. But this one seemed a little more difficult than other years based upon how many times these teams have played each other during the regular season and just how physically challenging this regular season was. And the first few games have not disappointed, and they've all been extremely close.
Islanders and Penguins. Kyle Palmieri with a pair, including the overtime winners. Sidney Crosby, excellent. One of the headlines coming out of this one. No way of Evgeny Malkin. What to you was the big storyline coming out of game one between these two teams?
That the Penguins didn't win a playoff game again. That's really the story to me. They had all kinds of momentum coming into the game. The Islanders were struggling, and the Islanders have been somewhat of the Penguins kryptonite recently, especially when it comes to playoff games. So I thought the overtime was much more important for the Penguins. I think it was really important that they found a way to win the game. They did not. The Islanders gain a measure of confidence, and the Islanders are at their best when everybody thinks they're the underdog. I don't think they ever believe that within their own locker room, but when they play with that chip on their shoulder, they're a really difficult opponent for the Penguins, and that game one victory is going to do nothing for the Penguins' confidence, the fact that the Islanders found a way to win it in overtime.
Jonesy, the goaltending for Pittsburgh was an issue. Like, Jari probably needed to make at least one of those three saves that a lot of people would quibble with. What are they left to do with Tristan Jari?
They're going to have to build him back up, and they're going to have to make sure that they play really well in front of him defensively. I thought they did for most of the game. I did not like the way they played in the third period, Pittsburgh. I thought they took their foot off the gas late in the second period when they had a chance to extend their lead with a power play opportunity. I don't think you want to keep a goaltender with limited playoff experience in tight games. So if you have a chance to extend your lead, that would do wonders for a guy that has not had, obviously, very much playoff experience. And now, after game one, there's all kinds of question marks based upon the way he handled his glove in that game. So the Islanders will be talking up about shooting the puck at his glove side, and Jari's going to try to compensate with some glove saves to kind of take away the edge that the Islanders probably perceive that they have right now. Mm-hmm. And I think it actually played into Brock Nelson's goal as well, because the first two went over the glove, the third one went under the glove, and you wonder if he was overcompensating after allowing the first two goals that, the way that he did.
That's an excellent point. I do wonder if we're still having the Jari conversation, and we probably are when you consider the nature of the goals. I wonder if we're still talking as much about the Penguins' goaltending if Crosby scores on that tip to the side of the net, Sorokin makes the great save. We've seen Crosby score that goal a million different times in his career. Couple that with a Pittsburgh power play that went 0-for-3. If they get one and Crosby scores on that play, is the Jari conversation even happening, Jonesy?
It's not. And I think when the Penguins look back at it as a team, that's the things that they're going to point to and try to alleviate some of the pressure on Jari. They had their opportunities. Sorokin made an outstanding save on the one Crosby deflection that you were just alluding to. I thought Sorokin made a number of very good saves and showed that he's got tremendously quick legs. He made some great pad saves down low. I don't think the Penguins did enough to disrupt him in and around the blue paint. I think they can do a better job of that, and Crosby's one of the best in the game in that regard. That might be an area of emphasis if I was Mike Sullivan going into game two. But Sorokin lived up to his billing. He's been a very good rookie goaltender. He's been part of a great tandem there for the New York Islanders, and they defend extremely well. You have to give the Islanders credit. They carried forward some of the great habits that they've had during the regular season and performed them, not to perfection in game one, but at the right times, they were there to make the right plays.
The OT hero there in Kyle Palmieri, what have you made of his time with the Islanders so far? And does it even matter if he plays like that the rest of the way?
Well, Jason, it's great now, isn't it? Like, that's all you're looking for.
Looking
Lou Lamoriello, I'm sure, had a smile on his face. Not that Lou's ever smiling during a playoff series, but I think that's why Kyle Palmieri was brought in. I think we all expected an immediate impact from Palmieri, but that was not the case. That was certainly the case in the first playoff game in an Islanders uniform for Palmieri. And I liked his all-around game. I thought he was much more noticeable. 5-on-5, he won a ton of puck battles. I thought he protected the puck well. I thought he frustrated the Crosby line at times. Playing with Pajot, it looks like they found some chemistry there. And they are the line that's supposed to, try to defend against the Penguins' top line, but at the same time create some offensive opportunities. It looked like they relished that role, and they were the most productive and most effective line for the Islanders. And you can be sure Barry Trotz is going to keep wheeling them back out there in all situations. I really thought Pajot drove the bus for the New York Islanders. Took many key faceoffs and won those draws. Did a great job while shorthanded, and then picked up a three-point game along the way. And I know you guys witnessed it a lot this time with the Ottawa Senators. The bigger the games, the better he performed. So that duo was their best thing going offensively for the Islanders. I would expect that to continue.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna get there to talk a little bit about Jean-Gabriel Pageau with the one goal and the two assists. For my money, Borny, agree or disagree, I thought he was the best player on the ice last night for the Islanders. Always good to see a Tanev back in the game, and Brandon Tanev yesterday after missing 18. Was it just me, or did he try to run everybody out of the rink every time he was on the ice, Jonesy?
I love the way he plays, and I love the fact that he's fast enough to get there.
Yeah.
One of the big challenges for guys in the game today is foot speed. Like, Matt Martin's a very tough and difficult player to play against. He does make a lot of contact, but it's not as easy for him to get in position to make contact because he's not as fleet of foot as someone like Tanev. So he's an important element to this Penguins team, and he's always noticeable. I mean, and he plays, for the most part, a very disciplined game. It is hard to hit legally the way the rules are set up, and 99% of the time he makes good, hard, legal contact, and it's with a purpose. It's one thing to, you know, one purpose to knock the other guy down, but most importantly, it's to loosen up the puck and allow the Penguins to get in on the forecheck or to win a defensive battle by knocking someone down and chipping the puck out of the defensive zone. He was a very shrewd signing by Jimmy Rutherford, and I think the Penguins are very appreciative of everything that he brings to the table.
Some of the conversation I've seen around this Pittsburgh team has been like, you know, is the core done? Do they need to move on from this group? And it's like, they just won the division. I personally am a believer in the Penguins. At the same time, I know that down the stretch, they played like Buffalo four times, New Jersey four times, I think, in their final 10 games. So it's tough to know what to really make of what this Penguins team is. Are you a believer that this is a team that can contend for a Stanley Cup, or was it just a decent regular season for a team fizzling out?
I think they're a team that can contend for the Stanley Cup. I like a lot about their mix. I love the way Brian Dumoulin makes everybody better on the back end. I think question marks early this season through the first 15 games were all centered around the goaltending. But when Dumoulin arrived on the scene, those questions went away. So I like that top pairing. I think Mike Matheson has exceeded my expectations and has fit in seamlessly there in Pittsburgh and has played the game in a much more intelligent fashion than he demonstrated with the Florida Panthers. So I give him credit for the way he's elevated. Cody Ceci has also played well. So I like them defensively. I know that Jari can play better than he did in game one. And their forward group's as good as any forward group that's left in the playoffs. So you add Malkin to the mix, and hopefully he gets back in there for game two or shortly after that. The Penguins are going to be a very dangerous team. But getting past the pesky Islanders will be a big challenge. They get past the Islanders, and they'll gain a lot of confidence from that, and they could ride that confidence all the way to a Stanley Cup championship.
But this team's a tough out. Man, Islanders play hard. Before we let you go, Jonesy, get your thoughts on which of the other series has your interest the most, whether we've seen game one or whether game one is still to come tonight. Which series has your eye other than this Penguins-Islanders series?
I'm going to go with St. Louis and Colorado, and I'm just really curious to see what the Blues can do. That Stanley Cup championship pedigree sometimes comes to the forefront. Expectations are that Colorado will, you know, skate right through them and be on their way to winning a Stanley Cup championship. Those expectations come with great weight. And teams like St. Louis that have won before, like Chicago last year against the Edmonton Oilers, seem to find a way to cause all kinds of issues that you might not anticipate before a series begins. So I know there's holes there. I know there's injuries with the Blues. But I do like a lot about the way Ryan O'Reilly plays when the playoffs roll around. And I like the Blues as an underdog. Similar to the Islanders against the Penguins, the Blues can frustrate you, and they do have a formula for playing against Colorado where they've done a real good job on the forecheck, forcing the Avalanche to play in the defensive zone. So curious to see how that series plays out.
We'll see game one tonight, 10 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet 1. Jonesy, always the best. Thanks so much for stopping by. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs. We'll make sure to check in soon.
Thanks a lot, Jay. Jeff, appreciate it, guys. Take care.
Yeah, thanks, Jonesy.
Keith Jones from the NHL on NBC. You know, it's interesting that he mentions the St. Louis Blues. There's a theory out there about St. Louis that you go back to the year that they won the Stanley Cup, and it was a great run for how many months? Five? Six?
Yeah, sure.
Outside of that, have they really been anywhere? Like, is the expectation that we have of the St. Louis Blues based on something that's just not there? They just got hot for a couple of months.
Yeah. I like that decor that they won a cup with, you know, and they still have pieces of that. You know, my take on the Blues right now is just that I don't think they're defensively where they were when they won the cup. You know, they never scored a ton of goals.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's never been a thing they did great, was score goals, but they at least defended like hell and played physical and all that. This year, they're, you know, of the 16 teams remaining, they give up the most goals against. So coming up against Colorado, I know there's championship pedigree or whatever on St. Louis' side, but I personally think they're going to have a tough time.
It's tough against the Avalanche. I'm not in the minority here. I picked them to win the Stanley Cup at the beginning of the season. Still pick them to win the Stanley Cup here at the end of it, well, as the playoffs kick off. What do you make of Nashville and Carolina? Sort of mentioned a couple of things about them earlier about, you know, expecting Nashville to try to run Carolina out of the building. How do you see this matchup starting tonight?
It's tough to come up with a way that I think this is an overly competitive series. You know, I want to for the good of hockey, but, like, I don't. I don't think it's a competitive series. And by the way, in hockey, the underdog wins like 40% of the time. Like, big underdogs win like 40% of the time. So right. I'm not saying Nashville can't take a game off Carolina out of four or five cracks, but I just, this to me, Carolina's defense is so good. They've actually got really good goaltending this year. They score like crazy. I don't know. You're right. Nashville will come out there and try to bully it up and make it an emotional series and different from how Carolina likes to play. It's incumbent on Carolina to sort of take some of those wraps, stick to their game, and play hockey.
Alex Nedeljkovic, by the way, gets a start tonight for Carolina.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? Here's a guy that was
190 save percentage this year through like 25 starts or something. Like, they never barely got scored on.
Goals against of 190, save percentage 932, one loss record of 15-5.
Yeah, on a team that's just been dying for someone to play goal.
And let's remind everybody, he was on waivers.
Yikes, man. Yikes. This year?
Yeah, and he's getting the start tonight. On a team that many are looking at and saying, you know what? Wouldn't surprise us to see them win the cup.
Yeah, this is the thing with the, you know, it's a Leafs thing too. Like, when you have goalies that haven't played in these moments, like, it used to be like, I can't get it done. But, like, I feel like, you know, Binnington took a team that he had barely been the starter for to a Stanley Cup championship with St. Louis. Like, you know, we saw Matt Murray play very well for the Penguins as an unproven guy and win cups. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Who do you like? I mean, there's so many to choose from. Anyone specifically, because Carolina doesn't get a ton of headlines, anyone specifically you really like on the Hurricanes?
Yeah, I actually bet. I didn't bet many players to score a bunch in the playoffs, but I picked three guys. I picked Aho, Teravainen, and Niederreiter. Like, Niederreiter has actually become a sneaky little offensive player. I think he's on pace for 30 goals this year or something like that. So they've got some guys who can put the puck in the net. Obviously, we know Svechnikov can do all sorts of fancy things too. So for me, it's kind of like the amalgamation of talent on that team. There's not really one guy that it's all pooled up in. It's nicely spread about.
And that Martin Natchez kid too, the first rounder from 2017, mm-hmm. who they got midway through the first round. That's another one they have, and he's top six guy. Like, it's almost an embarrassment of riches. Like, when you look at that back end, you know, Jacob Slavin should get some Norris consideration. You know, Dougie Hamilton is Dougie Hamilton. Brett Pesce, like, Yanni Hakanpaa is someone they picked up from Anaheim, who's a hard
hitter. Nice physical
hitter.
Bite to him, yeah.
Right? Yeah, he's got some snarl to him. Like, I like a whole bunch. And the Brind'Amour effect here as well.
Well, my theory has long been...
May win Jack Adams.
I think he's a favorite. And my theory has long been, if you can take offensive players and convince them to play defense, convince them to play with that bit of, like, passion, the way that Brind'Amour has those guys going, that's the most dangerous combo in hockey. The one thing I wonder with them is I think they snuck up on teams in years past. You know, I think it was two playoffs ago they were in the conference final. You know, they've made some noise in the postseason, you know, with this team. I don't think they're sneaking up on anyone anymore. So I there's an extra layer of pressure that comes with being a team with expectations. I think they're finally that. Like, dropping out in the first round of Nashville would be a monumental failure for that team.
Right. No one really expects that to happen. But if you're Carolina right now, and you're looking how game one went between the Florida Panthers and Tampa Bay Lightning, are you not just licking your chops?
Like, well, if you do, want to play that style, yeah.
Do that seven times, guys, and then we'll feast on whatever's remaining of the husk of a team that you're going to be after going to hell for seven games.
This is one of those series that if Carolina can, like, stand in there and take the punches in the first game or two, like, they get up a game or two in the series, it's over. Like, Nashville's going to know they're the lesser team and they're not coming back in the series. But, yeah, you know, Nashville's best chance is to get out and do the Columbus, what Columbus did to Tampa Bay a couple years ago. You know, punch them in the mouth early, get them reeling, and all of a sudden Tampa's like, what just happened? And they never recover, and a week later the series is over. That's kind of the best bet for Nashville here. It's an unlikely one.
Playoff hockey's the best. All right, more Hockey Central in a couple of moments. Wrap up here in a couple of seconds. Boston back in action tonight. Game two looked to even up with the Washington Capitals as well. So busy night around the NHL and the Stanley Cup playoffs. More previews after this. Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Okay, so Justin, after the first couple of days of Stanley Cup playoff hockey, all the games have been decided by one goal. Does that streak end tonight? We have Bruins and Caps, Preds and Canes, Abs and Blues. Three-game Monday night.
Yeah, I think you got the two biggest favorites play tonight in Colorado and Carolina to me. So I think one of those two get it done. Also, it's hockey. Give me an empty netter somewhere in here. We got to break the streak tonight.
Listen, the Craig Anderson story was wonderful on the weekend. Like, that was fantastic. Hey, everybody, Craig Anderson plays the Washington Capitals. Pay attention. And it was a great night for the Caps. Great night for Dowd. Great night for Craig Anderson. But this can't last, right? Like, he can't carry this team, can he? Game two tonight against the Bruins.
Never know. Hockey's funny like that.
Hockey's just been fun. All right, enjoy it. Smith and Jones next on The Fan.